Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, live from downtown Jersey City in that great state of New Jersey. I'm so glad to be with you this evening. So glad you are here with me. Thanks for joining. I've got a great conversation to share with you with WFMU's own Michael Shelley. Now, we're going to be talking about AI-generated music, which is a topic that I have been wanting to talk about for some time now, because it's just popping up everywhere. These AI generators, you know, there's ChatGPT that can generate text when you put in a prompt like, write me an essay on the Great Gatsby or something, and it'll spit it out. And then there are image generators like DALL-E. Give me a picture in 8-bit pixel art of Santa Claus on a dinosaur or something, and it'll spit that out. And then, more recently, there have been these AI-generated music platforms, AI-generated music, in which you put in the same sort of prompt and you get out of a song as the output. It comes almost immediately. So the prompt could be something like, give me Elvis singing Happy Birthday with a reggae beat or something like that. And sure enough, out it pops. So generative AI has been in the news a lot. And I've done shows on AI in the past, but I haven't said anything specifically about music, except for this interview I did with Ryan Walsh. If you go back in the archives at WFMU.org or at tectonic.fm, you can find my interview with Ryan Walsh. He's in the band Hallelujah the Hills. He wrote a great book called Astral Weeks, not the Van Morrison album. It's the book. By Ryan Walsh. Anyway, if you go back and listen to that interview, which is a couple of years ago, we were talking about the very first version of AI-generated music, and I played some examples. If we have time after the interview, I might play you a little snippet of that conversation, because it's interesting to hear how far these generators have come since just a couple of years ago. I remember playing, actually was an AI-generated Elvis song in my conversation with Ryan Walsh, and it vaguely sounded like Elvis was in a cavernous tunnel somewhere. I mean, it's very echoey, and he's in the background, and you couldn't quite make out the lyrics. It was very primitive, very rudimentary. That's not what's happening these days. So this brings us to Michael Shelley, because Michael Shelley, let me just say, has a great show. If you haven't listened to his show, or if you don't listen to a lot of other shows on WFMU, let me encourage you to make a date with WFMU on a Saturday morning starting at 11 a.m. Eastern. Or you can go back, find the archives at WFMU.org, and you can listen to his past shows. But it's a great show. It's a 2-hour show. He'll describe it during an interview that I'm going to play here in a few minutes. But it's a lot of fun. It's high energy. Michael's a great host. He's a great DJ. He knows a tremendous amount about music and musical history, and he always chooses just a great song list for his 2-hour show every week. And so I am a habitual listener of Michael's show. And that's sort of my late Saturday morning routine is to turn on his show. And a couple of Saturdays ago, I noticed that between sets of songs, he was playing what I could tell were AI generated bumpers and I'm going to play a couple of them during our interview, but I could tell that Michael had caught the bug for AI generated music. And so I asked him if he'd like to have a conversation about about the topic because he's obviously interested in it. He's had some experience with it on his show, and he very graciously accepted the invite. And so we had a good conversation recorded a few days ago, and I'm gonna share that with you now. So we're gonna get into AI generated music with examples with Michael Shelley, WFMU DJ. If you would like to join in the live listener chat, go to WFMU.org, click playlists and comments, and you can join the other commenters, most of whom I would expect are human. Maybe there are some AI bots there. I don't know. You can ask them yourself. You can go to the playlist and ask them. If you're listening in the future to an archive or podcast version, go to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm. And click the playlist link for April 29, 2024, and you can see links to Michael's show and all of the comments and a couple of silly images that I always like to put on the playlist. I always like to rotate in some new material for your visual enjoyment. Let's go ahead and listen now to my interview with WFMU DJ Michael Shelley here on Tectonic on WFMU. Michael Shelley, welcome to Tectonic.
Oh, first of all, I'm a huge fan and a huge listener. And, you know, I want to tell people that usually you and I talk, you know, off the air, and often you talk about music. And I just think it's important that people know that your life does involve being a fan of music.
Well, thanks, Michael. Some of what I know about music, I learned from your show.
Uh-oh.
Well, I've been listening to your show for so many years, well before I was even on the air at WFMU. And listeners should know it's on Saturday mornings, well, late morning, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. It's well worth listening to. It's so fun. The music, the occasional interviews, and your mic breaks. Just a standout show on the WFMU schedule. I've really enjoyed for so many years.
That's very kind of you, Mark. Thank you.
How many years have you been on the air here, Michael?
I did my first show, my first fill-in in 1992, and I've kind of gone, I was off the air a little while doing other things, but still doing fill-ins all the while. And then I think I've been on this Saturday mornings since 2006. So, but, you know, since 92, you know, continuously.
Wow. That's 32 years.
Yeah, I was 12 years old when I started.
That's the only way to explain your youthful demeanor. Okay, so I just want to establish why we're talking today, because I heard something on your show, your most recent show, from Saturday, April 20. You did something really unusual. You played some jingles or bumpers that were AI generated during the show. We're going to get to the AI-ness of this in a second, but I just want to paint a picture for listeners who haven't heard your show before. As I said, your show is a lot of fun. You're playing number one hits, as you say on the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think the show sort of exists in an imaginary world where top 40 radio exists, but it plays freeform music. It's sort of a crossover of those two ideas.
So it's crossing genres, but these are all fun, quite often very energetic songs. And keeping the energy high between songs, you often have these 20 to 30 second jingles that just, they'll have someone singing or talking, saying, "You're listening to the Michael Shelley Show on WFMU." You've had a rotating set of those jingles that you've used for years, right?
Yeah, some of them have my daughter, some of them have WFMU staff members, some of them are voiceover people I've hired, some of them are music I've created in my basement, some of them are reworked old jingles from the 60s with kind of new voiceover added to them. So yes, they're a huge part of the show. And they also, I think, help transition from one kind of music. You can kind of do a 90-degree turn by sticking this 10-second jingle in between two otherwise unconnected songs.
You know, that's right. I never thought of it that way. It's a way to enable certain segues in the show. And yeah, it really works. I mean, there are no rough edges in your freeform curation. The show just, it just flows. And now I see that the jingles play a big part of that.
Yeah.
So here I was, as always, on a late Saturday morning, listening to your show. and I heard a new jingle. Now, I've heard your show for so many years. I know all the jingles. I'm familiar with them. So when you play a new jingle, I notice. And this, I forget which one it was, but it was maybe something that had a 1950s rock and roll feel to it. And immediately I thought, I think there's AI in that. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. Michael used AI for a new jingle. That's kind of neat. And then a few songs go by, and here comes another jingle, this from a completely different genre. I mean, it's, you know, reggae or something. Also, clearly to me, AI generated. But as the show unrolled, I realized you were probably going to say something about this because it was jingle after jingle after jingle, all created by AI. So can you tell me what your plan for that show was and how you pulled it off?
Well, I really should have waited a week because I had just, you know, somebody had sent me an AI, a silly AI song, and I looked at this website and realized I could try to make a song. And all those jingles that I played last week were just made in half a day. And I didn't even think about how I would really present them. And as soon as, I think the one you probably heard first was this one from the more of like a 1930s. It sort of sounded like Bing Crosby. And it has to be AI because it's just impossible to make music sound that way, and it's also impossible to get Bing Crosby to sing your jingle for you, no matter how much you want to spend. So, yeah, my idea was just to play these to see if people started commenting about them, and immediately people did, although no one guessed AI, at least on the message board, and WFMU, as you know, has very active message boards for each program. And then at about the half-hour point of my shows, usually when I do sort of a longer mic break, I just sort of said, okay, just here's the deal. Those are all AI. And then I played a bunch more and just talked about it. And I was very curious to hear a listener reaction to them because I myself was still trying to figure out what it means and is it good, is it bad? My mind was honestly just kind of blown with how great these were.
Why don't we listen to a couple of these so listeners can get a sense of the range and the fidelity of these AI-generated jingles. Again, these are jingles that you played, Michael, on April 20, 2024, on your show, Michael Shelley Show, here on WFMU.
It's the Michael Shelley Show on WFMU, the Fun 91. Good afternoon.
Saturday morning, I turn on my radio, and all my problems suddenly melt away, thanks to WFMU, the mighty WFMU, freeform WFMU, oh yes, it's true.
It's the Fun 91, the mighty WFMU with number one. It's on your radio.
One of the things that struck me as I was listening to these, as I said before, is the fidelity, how good they are. A couple of weeks ago on Tectonic, I played an audio file that was AI-generated that had been sent to me by Webhamster Henry, who's a frequent commenter and listener, and I know has had involvement with WFMU in the past. Henry had put together a Tectonic sign-off that had been generated by AI. You probably know, Michael, at the end of every show, I say, avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, get off Google.
Yeah.
Henry had used one of these services, maybe the same one you used, for your jingles. And he created something that was, it was the sign-off, but it was in this, I don't know the right genre. Someone said it was 80s dance hall pop. I played it on the show, and someone on the comment board, I thought, expressed it well. They said, I wish I didn't like this as much as I do.
I absolutely relate to that. Absolutely right. Well, somebody on the comment board of my show commented, great, now we can get rid of all the human musicians earning a living. If you can't see that coming, you're more ignorant than blind. So,
yeah.
So it's definitely something that scares some people and offends some people. But from a creative perspective, it's an amazing tool, and I really believe that unless you've messed with it, if you're a musician, a music maker, you can't really speak to it. You really need to get in there and mess with it. You know, you can be against the entire principle of AI, but right now I think there's a lot of people who don't really understand what it is or what it can do. I'm not even sure it's a good thing. And like I said on my show, I think this feels like the beginning of a science fiction movie where the world ends and it starts with a DJ going, hey, look at this funny jingle I made.
Right.
And then zombies are biting people, you know.
Yeah, I think the downsides here are worth talking about a little bit because I have some strong opinions about AI. This is just my own perspective, but I think that these generative AI music services are doing something that's really fun. For right now, they're free, but they are a bribe, as a 20th century technology critic used this language, that new technology often comes with a built-in bribe to get the public to start using it. Generative AI has a bribe in the form of generating fun songs, or if you use something like ChatGPT, you can generate mildly amusing stories and poems, or even write your high school English paper using it. What that hides is the spread of the infrastructure that's necessary to run both these generative AI bots, but also the massive surveillance infrastructure that has to be incorporated to handle all of the surveillance data that these systems take in from us every day. I mean, we didn't even get to jobs yet, but just in terms of the environmental toll, we can generate these jingles and have fun. And you're right, people should take a look at them and see what these tools can do. But it's also, I think it's important for us to keep in mind that this is just the very thin veneer of something fun on the surface of an industrial build out across the world that is sucking down incredible amounts of electricity and fresh water that are not being used for the most part to create funny jingles. They're being used for darker purposes.
Well, I can't speak to the surveillance link to making funny jingles, but I'm not an expert in sort of that bigger picture. But, and you and I have talked about this before just in our private lives, you know, you and I look at this a little bit differently. Like, I think that it's coming. In fact, it's here. And I think as a society, if we want to protect the jobs or protect the environment, we have a structure, the government, to do that. We need to act to do that. But to be against AI because it's going to lead to worse music is, I think, a bad argument. And in fact, you know, to me, listening to the most of the hit music today, it's worse than AI, which is a strange irony.
Yeah. Okay, so this is one of the main questions I wanted to ask you, since you have this amazing depth of knowledge and experience with music. These tools are definitely going to be used. What do you think, Michael, is the future of music with these tools out there? Do you think that their use will be confined to, you know, auto-tuning the singer a little bit here or there, nudging some instrumentation, enhancing things in the background? Or do you think we might see fully AI-generated songs? And would you be okay with that? Would you actually, in all seriousness, want to play an AI-generated pop song on your show?
It's a very complicated question. And, you know, in some ways, art works if it moves you, no matter what it is. If it's a painting, if it's a song, if it moves you, then it works, right? And so if, you know, if it turns out that, you know, a chimpanzee painted it, it's still fine. If it turns out AI painted it, it's fine. I think the idea of a non-novelty AI entire song is, I can't imagine there's going to be too many of those that are going to interest too many people. But I do think as a tool, you know, as you mess around with the AI thing and you can ask it to change it a little bit or a lot, and you can add different tags, you know, and the amount of information it holds in its head is infinite. And if you've ever worked with a bunch of musicians in a room, it's a very magical thing. And I don't think that's ever going to go away. But the AI also provides another musician that has an infinite knowledge of every great pop song and can put them together in ways that you wouldn't predict. And I'd be very surprised if there aren't people right now who are writing songs who are not looking to AI as a creative spark. You know, I'm stuck. How do I get from this part of the song to the other? I'll ask AI to generate 100 ways, and I'm going to incorporate that little bit into my song. And I'd be surprised if that's not already happening right now. But like I said, to me, a lot of the music being made right now is being made with, you know, non-organic instruments, let's say, you know. And but, you know, there's always a trade-off, right? When digital recording came in, some people were against it because it, quote, sounded worse. And of course, a lot of those people had a financial stake in keeping the status quo and keeping very expensive recording studios going and record labels. And now it's very easy and inexpensive to make, anyone can record music and release music to the whole world almost for free. And so, you know, the downside is there's a lot more terrible music, a lot more. And there's also a ton of great music we never would have heard under the old system. So, yeah, I do believe that a society we're kind of getting, you know, garbage is being just weighing us down in increasing numbers. And maybe the ultimate downside is that people will give up wanting to sift through the garbage to find something organic and good, whether it's made by AI or not. So to me, that's sort of the most obvious downside, just like too much garbage.
Yeah, and as you say, if you listen to current pop music, a lot of it sounds quite a lot like AI-generated music, or maybe even inferior to that somehow.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host. We are halfway through my interview with Michael Shelley, who is a WFMU DJ. His show is on Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Great show, I'd recommend to you. This evening, I'm speaking with Michael about AI-generated music, specifically some bumpers or jingles that Michael created using a music generation platform, an AI platform, a couple weeks ago, and getting his read on what this all means for music and for the future. And, well, we got the second half to get to. If you want to listen, if you want to join in the live listener chat, go to WFMU.org and click playlist and comments. Let's go ahead and listen to the rest of my interview with Michael Shelley here on Tectonic on WFMU. One cynical interpretation of this push to Gen AI could be, you know, the companies are saying, hey, you've been listening to mostly automated glop for so long and you haven't complained, why not take it one more step? Just one more step and make it fully automated. It's the same glop you've been listening to. So what's the difference, really? Except that we, the companies, make a little more money. There was actually something that a listener told me about in the Netherlands. I hadn't heard about this, but there is actually a fully AI-generated online radio station that's operating out of the Netherlands. I'll put the link on the playlist. But it's an ongoing 24-hour stream of music and commercials and DJ mic breaks, and everything, as I understand it, is completely AI-generated. Now, everything's in Dutch, of course, so I can't understand it, but you can get a feel for what a fully AI-generated radio station sounds like, and I have to say, it does not sound all that different from a mega commercial pop station here in the U.S.
It sounds more like an art piece than, you know, I don't know if we can look to that as what the future will bring. Listen, you and I both know greed drives everything, and people will, you know, the next time somebody's making a 30-second television commercial and they need a 5-second piece of instrumental music, yeah, they could just ask AI to make it for them in seconds, you know, and they'll save themselves a small fortune, you know, right. And that's going to happen. Things like that are without question going to happen. But are people going to stop wanting to go see live bands? I don't think so. You know, I don't think they're ever going to really, you know, there's already a million radio stations that have 100% of the voices taped in advance. In fact, almost all of satellite radio, the hosts come in and tape all of the mic breaks in, you know, a half hour or so, and then an engineer inserts the song. So, you know, people who want something real, I think, will always make it, and people who always want to hear that will always hear it. I'm curious if you know the answer to this question. Who legally and morally deserves credit for, like, those jingles that I made? Some of them I wrote the words to, and I put some tags in, you know, make it sound like this group or that group or this, you know, peppy or, you know, Baroque. You could put all sorts of tags in there. Who legally, let's say somebody wanted to use one of those jingles that you played earlier in a movie and they were going to pay someone, do I deserve to be paid legally, morally?
That's a good question. I mean, there you're right on the edge of where law and technology are meeting and trying to navigate the future right now. The legal answer probably is nobody knows at this stage. There's going to have to be some precedent set down. But another way to ask the question is, who should get the credit? If we could write the law right here together, Michael. And even there, it's an interesting and complicated question.
Well, we have a history in this country of being, until very recently, of making the laws very much on the side of new creators, because music, we want to encourage people to keep creating, and often music comes from, you know, music that went before, and it builds on it. And we've been very mostly letting people get away with being inspired by other music.
That's right. And that might be the defense of OpenAI and these other AI companies, where they say, we've always had a history of building on work in the past. You know, there's a lot of people who say that ChatGPT is basically a giant plagiarism machine because it inhaled all of the textual matter on the internet and is serving as a giant autocomplete function. So those high school papers that it's spitting out based on The Great Gatsby, it's basing that on other writing that other people have posted and probably own the copyright to online. And OpenAI is not paying out any dividends or royalties to those copyright holders, those original writers. And I would suspect that the same thing is happening with these other services that we're talking about, the music generation. They inhaled all recorded music. It's a kind of a musical autocomplete. And yes, occasionally we'll make a seeming conceptual leap, as you said before, that can blend two genres or take something in an unusual direction. But really, everything these models do has been done before. They're just using advanced computational statistics to fill in the gaps. So what should happen, Michael, is any artist, in my opinion, any artist whose music has been sucked into these things, which is basically all recorded artists, should be getting royalty checks. But the tech bros are not going to take kindly to that, nor are their investors, as you say, greed. The other thing I'll say is that you may have heard about this. There's a new job title that just showed up within the last few months within some of these companies. It's called prompt engineer. And I don't mean you're being prompt like you're on time. I mean the prompt, which is the text you wrote to request the song, is being considered a work of engineering, as though someone who says, give me a pop song sung by Bing Crosby with the following lyrics, is an engineer of some sort. But again, go to the tech bros and they'll say, we deserve the credit. And if anyone in particular outside of us deserves any credit at all for those jingles, it should be the prompt engineer, whose name is Michael Shelley. Hmm.
You're talking about very fine legal arguments that I have no idea. I mean, it does seem to me that, like any computer-related thing, it only is as good as what you put into it or who programmed it or whatever, and people had to do all of that. And so, yes, a person making an AI song has to put in some prompts. Some of them could be very literal, linking to some copyrighted, right? If I say, make a song that sounds like Toots and the Maytals, like you said, they're literally probably somewhere figuring out an algorithm that equals all of Toots and the Maytals' music. So yeah, you're right. That doesn't sound crazy to give them financial consideration. But on the other hand, if you and I got two guitars and said, let's write a song that sounds like Toots and the Maytals, we certainly wouldn't ever pay Toots and the Maytals, right? That's just considered part of how music evolves.
Well, that's a good point, Michael. You know, human musicians paying homage to past artists, somehow it just seems different to me, a couple of guys with guitars doing that versus heavily capitalized tech startups, you know, that have $100 million or $1 billion in capital looking to grow exponentially at no matter what the social or environmental cost. And they start basically churning out clones of Toots and the Maytals songs with different chord progressions and maybe different instruments. It just qualitatively, I feel uneasy about that.
Oh, totally.
Whereas I feel totally positive about the guys or gals with guitars who I feel like there's, you know, writing and performing a song in the style of another artist that's done usually with respect and with some knowledge of history and where you fit into musical culture. And that's good. That's an advancement for the species. Whereas these guys with these vast networks of data centers using their computational engines to spit out stuff for their own enrichment, that to me feels like what you were saying before, the beginning of the sci-fi movie where the world ends.
Well, if you've listened to my show, you know that I'm a harsh critic of the world and the direction that it's heading in. And I do believe there's a sort of a cumulative effect of all of the stuff you talk about. And I do believe it's making society more complacent and culturally less interesting. But I also believe that things like this are just a tool for humans to ruin, most likely, but it's not inherently the thing's fault that we're going to, by and large, use it for greed, because that's just what we do with everything. And, you know, you mentioned that the AI music things are all free at this point. I am flabbergasted that they're free, and I would assume at some time that they won't be, because the value that they give is just too gigantic. I mean, I don't think I'd... You know, I've already paid money for jingles in the past that people made. So I guess I could have a budget to make jingles for my show using AI. But there's a limit to that. But yeah, it's mind-blowing that it's free right now. It's just so incredibly powerful.
Well, at some point, they're going to charge because the sheer electricity usage is going to get too expensive for them, even if they have giant piles of money from investors. And I'll just say again, as communities run out of fresh water, there's going to be a bigger and bigger fight over whether water in the community should go to data centers or possibly if it should go to the citizens who live in those communities. Right now, the companies are sucking down all the water that they can as fast as they can. That is unsustainable. So at some point, the bill is going to come due. The question to me is, Do we start putting some guardrails around these companies soon, or do we wait until we're all out of water?
Right. I think the answer to that is obvious. Just going back to something, you mentioned that these companies that are putting so much money into this AI technology for music, there's also right now, I'm sure you know about this, people are in the financial world are gambling huge amounts of money buying up old catalogs. So it's the exact enemy of creativity, right? They are gambling that if we buy up, you know, Bruce Springsteen's songs or David Bowie's, we're going to spend, you know, fortunes on them, and we will own them for eternity. So clearly they have a vested interest in keeping that same music in front of people's ears for eternity. The longer, the more money they make. And I guarantee that at some point you're going to start hearing quote unquote new music from these artists that is 100% AI generated.
Yes, or only partially AI generated. I think I read somewhere, and my memory is blanking right now, but I think I read that there are moves afoot to reissue some popular songs and albums, remixes basically, that are in part AI generated, because that's a new way for these, you know, private equity firms that own the catalogs to bring out something new that they can sell, but that is also familiar enough to the market that it's a low risk venture for them to put that on the market. And it costs nothing for them to make a AI remix. So yeah. I can imagine in a few years there being all sorts of versions of Bowie, Springsteen, you know, name the artist, that caters to any taste. And we may get to a point where we say, what do I got to do to hear the original version of fill in the blank? I was in a restaurant not long ago. They played a song by the Steve Miller Band. I can't remember which one, but one of the greatest hits. I used to be a big fan of Steve Miller Band.
Me too.
And there was something wrong with the song. It had the nt underneath it. And I remember telling my wife, this is not, what is happening here? My entire life I've heard, and I forget which hit it was, but I, you know, you hear a hit from the 70s or 80s hundreds of times, you know every single bit of that song. And to put a backing beat underneath it, it was just it just felt gross to me. I would predict that we're going to hear a lot more of that as the financializing forces want to turn a lot of these old musical cultural landmarks into glop that is more easily digested by the majority of the culture.
Well, let me ask you a sensitive question. Like, what responsibility do people have to just reject this, right? Like, colorized movies never caught on, right? Because they stink, right? And people are just like, we'd rather watch the original.
So you want to know what people should do, or?
Well, what response, right? Obviously, these things are going to be crammed down people's throats, but I'm asking, what is people's responsibility in the equation to say, to just not consume this stuff and make it fail?
Well, you know, that's a good question. And some people would say, Michael, that you and I are already part of the problem, because here we are messing around with these AI jingles. And as your commenter said, you're putting people out of work. You know, you can take this as far as you want it by trying to reject everything wholesale. My own stance is, I think, similar to yours in the use of these tools, Michael. It's important for us to understand and have some fluency around what they can do, what they're capable of. So people want to generate a funny poem on ChatGPT. They want to generate some images on DALL-E. They want to generate a song or a jingle on these Gen AI music services. That's fine. The longer term question, I think, is more important, which is, are we aligning our lives and our workplaces around normalizing the everyday use of these things? For example, Michael, if you said, I really like these jingles, I'm announcing today that 30% of the musical content on my show is now going to be AI generated. That would be your step too far in normalizing the use of these things and drawing down a lot of water and electricity at the same time. I think first, as I often tell people, nobody is pure. There's no sense in trying to be 100% pure. But generally, I try to avoid making these things a habitual part of my life if I can more or less avoid it. For example, I canceled our Amazon Prime subscription a couple of years ago because I just want to avoid using Amazon, you know. So it wasn't a big step to get that habit out of the house. People all have to make their own choices. I think the way I like to frame it for myself is, what are the habits, what is the normalization that I'm willing to accept or not, in which case I got to resist it. I have one more question or two for you, Michael. This is where I often go at the end of an interview, which is to talk about the future. The jingles that you played on your April 20th show,
yes,
were so good. I mean, there was some variability in quality, but some of them were really good. And after the show ended, I thought to myself, this is just version one of these platforms. We're not even a year into generative AI being super popular. If we look ahead a year or 3 years or 5 years, what is the quality of the output going to sound like? Which is an interesting question to me, given how far advanced they already are in this first version. What do you think the future holds, Michael, for generative music, and does it make you excited or worried?
Well, the answer is, of course, it makes me both, you know, extremely excited, you know, and I'm only a few days into working with this stuff, and it's very primitive. In fact, a lot of the jingles that I've played are things that I made many, many versions and then edited them together, because the platform I was using only makes 33-second songs, and it'll add 33 seconds into the beginning or the end. And so to get short things, there's some editing involved. And I'm sure, as you just said, it's very exciting to me that at some point you'll be able to, with much finer precision, not have to make 200 things to get a 33-second thing that's what you really wanted. You'll be able to really pinpoint what you want. To me, that's very exciting. To me, that's a tool I can't wait to use. To me, that is going to bring joy to listeners. It's going to make better radio show. It's just fun, you know, and that's very exciting. On the other hand, oh, it's weird. It's just weird. And it has overarching, like you said, just, you know, the price of technology is something we just don't calculate when we use it, most of us, most of the time, and just what it means to the creation of music. Personally, I don't think it's going to stop most good songs and good recordings from being written and made. It's going to make bad music worse. That's what's mostly going to happen to it on a large scale, and that doesn't really worry me too much. You know, if Bruce Springsteen wants to put out 20 more songs after he dies, who cares? You know, that really doesn't bother me. That's the real world's problem. I don't live in the real world. I live in WFMU world.
And we should all live in WFMU world.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us which platform you used to make those jingles?
I used a couple. The good ones are a thing called Udio, udio.com.
Well, Michael Shelley, I really appreciate you taking some time to talk about AI-generated music and your thoughts about the present and the future. As I said at the top of the interview, listeners, you should check out Michael's show if you haven't already. It's Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern, and I'll be right there with you, listening, as always.
Mark, thank you. And, you know, I love your show. It's such a great, relatively new addition to WFMU. And I think what you do is important. And you kind of just today has a little bit inspired me not to be so uninformed about all of this stuff, you know. So, I think we need to figure this stuff out.
Thanks for being with me today, Michael.
Pleasure.
And we're back. If you are just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the remaining 12 minutes of the show, and then Dave Mandel will be on with his show, It's Complicated. It's a prog rock show that you should listen to, and it's followed by Bad Animals with Amanda and Jim the Poet, and then Brother Daniel Blumen with his eponymous show at 9 p.m. Eastern, taking us all the way to midnight. As I like to say, just stay tuned. Just stay tuned. Great programming for you on Mondays. I mean, all day. Every day. Not just Mondays. But I'm partial to Mondays, if that's all right. Thanks very much to WFMU DJ Michael Shelley for being my guest on this evening's show. I guess I'm also partial to Saturdays, because Michael's on Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. His great show. You should listen to it. And who knows? Maybe you'll hear some of his newest AI jingle work. and you can go back and listen to his April 20th show if you want to hear all the ones that we were talking about. There's a link to Michael's April 20th show. Well, you can find it regularly in the WFMU archives. But if you're on the playlist for tonight's show, you can find a link to Michael Shelley's show from April 2024 linked right there. There's also a link to the music generator that he named, that he used, and a link to Radio HDFM, which is that AI-generated station from the Netherlands. I want to say thanks to listener Hugo for pointing me towards that one. I looked it up, and it says that it's actually got a listing in Wikipedia, which says that Radio HDFM is an online quote-unquote radio station founded by Jeffrey Wirtz, I guess, better known by the pseudonym Egbert. It's the world's first radio station to run entirely on AI and contained more than 11 hours of music at the time of launch. And I like this. The station's tagline is "Real sound, fake music," which I think would be a good tagline for all AI-generated music. It's sound. I mean, it's definitely sound, real sound, but it is fake music. It's not real music. Of course, your mileage may vary. You may consider that the sorts of music generated by these platforms, as exemplified by Michael Shelley's jingles, is great music. You may find that you want to generate some yourself. And, you know, as Michael asked me, you know, what should we do to resist this, or should we be using this or not using that? He was asking my own opinion. He was very clear about his own opinion, which I respect. My opinion is, you want to generate a jingle, you should generate a jingle. I mean, again, I think it's worth knowing what these things can do. The larger question for me is, as I said, what are we normalizing? What are we considering is acceptable? Because that line is moving. It's being pushed outward by the tech companies saying, let us do this, let us do this, let us do this. And they're moving the line further and further out in their own favor. And they're asking us to approve every change that they make to our society, to our daily lives and work and our relationships. And here's the thing about AI-generated music. It's not about the music. It's not about the music. The AI-generated music, these music generation platforms, yeah, there's some startups. Eventually, they'll get bought by Google or Amazon or somebody, and a couple of founders will make a bunch of money. This whole thing is not about that. What AI generated, this is my own opinion, but I strongly feel that AI generated music platforms are a bribe, as I said in the interview. They're a way to get us comfortable with the idea of AI in normal life, because look, it's so fun. Listen, it's Paul McCartney singing, oh, AI, it's like those dancing murder bots from Boston Dynamics. They always have them choreographed to some popular pop song so that people will say, oh, those bots are such good dancers. They're so cute. And the robo dogs, which soon enough will be armed with rifles and flamethrowers, are shown to us as being cuddly, nice, happy little robo dogs. so that we will accept them and get used to them. The whole thing is a bribe. Now, I said during the interview that there was a 20th century technology critic who used this term of the bribe, and that critic was Lewis Mumford, who I have covered on this show before. You can go back and listen to my interview with Aaron Sachs, S-A-C-H-S, who wrote a great book called Up from the Depths about Lewis Mumford and Herman Melville. And in the 1960s, Lewis Mumford wrote an essay in which he talked about the, quote, magnificent bribe of these new systems. He wasn't specifically talking about AI, of course, but he's talking about the encroachment and the onslaught of technology in our society and it being presented with all of these goodies for us to enjoy so that we will accept the technology on the terms of the technology owners. I want to play you 1 minute of Lewis Mumford himself reading that part of his essay. And so you can hear it from Lewis Mumford himself. Here is Lewis Mumford talking about the magnificent bribe.
The bargain we are being asked to ratify takes the form of a magnificent bribe. Under the democratic, authoritarian, social contract, each member of the community may claim every material advantage, every intellectual and emotional stimulus he may desire, in quantities hardly available hitherto, even for a restricted minority. Food, housing, swift transportation, instantaneous communication, medical care, entertainment, education. But on one condition, that one must not merely ask for nothing that the system does not provide, but likewise agree to take everything offered, duly processed and fabricated, homogenized and equalized, in the precise quantities that the system, rather than the person, requires. Once one opts for the system, no further choice remains. In a word, if one surrenders one's life at source, authoritarian techniques will give back as much of it as can be mechanically graded, quantitatively multiplied, collectively manipulated and magnified.
And magnified. And that is, in fact, what has happened since the mid-1960s when Lewis Mumford wrote that essay and gave that speech. There's a great book. He's written a number of books. You can go back and listen to my interview with Aaron Sachs. Lewis Mumford is really worth reading for his vision of what technology was going to do as it spread and spread. And so here we are in 2024 looking at this new shiny object. It's another magnificent bribe where it says you can generate any song you want, sung in the voice of any popular singer and in any genre you want. Isn't that great? Just click the button, type in your prompt, click the button, and out will come this song. What the generator doesn't tell you is that we are building so many data centers right now to hold all of the surveillance data that the big tech companies and their government partners are taking down on us, that by one estimate, by the end of this decade, 25% of the electricity generated in the United States will be devoted to the running of those data centers. 25%. You think we have a climate crisis now? Wait until the big tech AI engines really get their hooks in our society. And so, yes, you can generate a jingle, you can enjoy some funny things, but don't lose sight of the larger issues. How much is in the balance here if we really choose to adopt what big tech is handing to us? Resist, friends. Resist. You're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Until next time, friends, you know exactly what to do. Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, friends, get off Google. And for our outro this evening, I thought I would go back one more time to Michael Shelley. He was kind enough to generate a Tectonic-themed song for our enjoyment. And keeping in mind what I just said about not losing sight of the larger picture, yes, let's say thank you to Michael Shelley once more for being on the show, and enjoy this AI-generated Tectonic song. Have a good week, everybody. See you next time.
Okay, kids, let's all get ready to do the Tectonic twist.
Well, everybody do the Tectonic twist. Do it with your mom, do it with your sis. It's sweeping nation, taking over the world. Tectonic twist is your new overlord. Tectonic twist. Yeah, do the tectonic twist. Yeah, do the tectonic twist. Yeah, do the tectonic twist.
Okay, kids, let's all get ready to do the tectonic twist.
Well, everybody do the tectonic twist. Do it with your mom, do it with your sis. It's sweeping nation, taking over the world. Tectonic twist is your new overlord. Yeah, do the tectonic twist.
Rock out. Yes, and 5% for nothing to begin tonight's show. I never announced that track. Do you not know the title of it? Surely you know the title of it. 5% for Nothing by Yes, a Bill Bruford penned track from the Fragile album. And good evening, everyone. The show is called It's Complicated. I'm your host, Dave Mandel. I'm here every Monday at this time, which is 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 7 to 8. I bring you an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. Delighted always to be here. No place I'd rather be on a Monday night, on any night, in fact. I'm going to start tonight's show with a little tribute, meaning I'm going to play a song by the Moody Blues, and this will be my humble tribute to Mike Pinder. Mike Pinder was the keyboard player in the Moody Blues. Moody Blues were a big favorite of mine when I was a kid. When I was a teenager, my older sister, who I owe a lot of my music knowledge to, had a bunch of Moody Blues albums, and I listened to them all the time, and I grew to be a big Moody Blues fan. And they're kind of, when you talk about bands from that era, you know, late 60s, 70s, Moody Blues seem to have been kind of forgotten. But they were a great band and deserve to be remembered. So why am I playing the Moody Blues? Some of you might know Mike Pinder, I mentioned, was the keyboard player from the Moody Blues. He died just a few days ago, sadly. And I learned at the same time he was the last living member of the group. I didn't realize that, and it's really sad. End of an era, as they say. So the thing about Mike Pinder is that he, well, he was the keyboard player, as I mentioned, but he, the Mellotron was heavily featured on Moody Blues albums. Mellotron was just a tremendous part of their sound. It was always present, and the Moody Blues were famous for, among other things, a kind of a very orchestral sound, and that basically was the Mellotron, which, of course, played taped strings and taped flutes and things. The thing about Mike Pinder, apart from being the keyboard player, apart from playing, contributing Mellotron to many Moody Blues tracks, he actually worked for Streatley. Streatley was the English company that manufactured the Mellotron, the instrument, in the 60s, and he worked for the company early on, I guess before becoming a rich pro musician. And I can't absolutely swear to this, but what I have read was that he worked on the assembly line, like he worked on the production line. And his job, at least at one point, was like was testing the after the Mellotron was completely assembled. Mike Pinder would come in and tap a few of the keys to make sure it was working, kind of thing. And so he was a Mellotron aficionado early on, and supposedly this seems like an important historical fact. Supposedly introduced John Lennon to the Mellotron. He was the one who. He was friends with Lennon, and he said, hey, check this instrument out. And, of course, the Mellotron was used famously on Strawberry Fields Forever and a whole bunch of other Beatles songs, Flying. So that's Mike Pinder. So I'm going to play a Moody Blues song, and, what to play is a difficult decision. But I'm going to play a song. I'm going to play a Mike Pinder composition, seems appropriate. This is going to be a track from the album Seventh Sojourn, which was the seventh Moody Blues album released in, I think, 1972. And it's going to be a track called Lost in a Lost World, actually opening cut on the album Seventh Sojourn from the Moody Blues. So here's the Moody Blues with Mike Pinder actually singing.
love with all of us so we can be an ever-loving family.